welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, horror. Later on, The Witch's Tale from 1932. But first, Murder at Midnight, a syndicated episode from December 13th, 1946, called The Black Swan.
Here, Mr. Bradley. Mm-hmm. Girl in mystery drowning, Penniquit, Maine. While her sister stood helplessly on the dock, Abigail Thorne, 26, was drowned in the bay here at midnight last night.
What?
According to her sister Sarah, the older girl was about to board her ship.
The Black Swan.
What? Why, yes, that's the name. How did you know?
How did I know? Because it had to be. It had to be.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a moment in The Black Swan.
It's odd, isn't it? How familiar sounds revive old memories. Listen to the waves against the dock. Yeah, it's 6 years since I, Amos Bradley, last heard this sound. Last stood here in the moonlight, looking out over Penniquit Bay. And there she rides at anchor, just as she did 6 years ago. A black ship against the sky. 45 feet of black hull beauty. The loveliest sloop ever turned out in the Maine shipyard. 45 feet of unholy black evil. The Black Swan, she was named, but a better name would have been Ship of Death. Yes, she was even launched in blood.
Henderson! Oh, Henderson! See my son anyplace?
Hello, Mr. Thorne. Left Fred on deck. Well, how do you like the Black Swan?
Lighter. Fine talk about a ship built by Fred Thorne.
Well, Fred thinks she's the trimmest job he ever turned out.
Trim? A pleasure ship. Well, what are you waiting for? Will you tell Fred I'm here?
Well, yes, sir. I'll get him just as soon as we check the keel plate. Yeah, we're going to launch her in a few minutes. Stay around and watch her hit the water.
Stay around. Watch. Old broken down Caleb Thorne. That's all he's good for, anyway. Stay around. Watch.
Hello, Father. How are you?
Stay around. Watch. Watch as good as buried. Built for a girl. Think your sister will like it?
Abby will be pleased, Father. It's a fine birthday present.
All right, men. He's just about ready. All set here, Fred.
Okay, Henderson. I'm coming down, too. Want to check the clearance. I'll see you in a minute, Dad.
Go on, go on.
All right, over here.
Captain Thorne will stand here and watch. A worthless, peg-legged old man. The sea is the Lord. The sea giveth a man his life and taketh his life. Stand aside, Caleb. What's taking him so long? Seems. What's that? Fred!
One of the braces, Father! It slipped! Hey, Henderson!
Henderson, you fool! Get out here! The braces are giving away! Fred! Son! Get out!
I'm trying to! I've got the question! If I move the other brace, I'm afraid! Henderson!
I mean, Fred, just hold on!
Hurry! She's starting to fire!
Yes, launched in blood. Murderer of Fred Thorne. The Black Swan never left the yard. For months, she lay there on the waves like a stranded whale on a beach. There was talk in town about old Caleb turning strangely on the one thing he was supposed to love, his daughter Abby. But I dismissed it as idle village gossip. Actually, no one knew very much about that family. The Thorns kept themselves on that little island of theirs. You can just make it out. Yeah, they're beyond the breakwater. And then one day, about 6 months after Fred was killed, I ran into Philip Hazlitt on Main Street.
Hi, Amos. Just the man I want. I'm looking for a first mate.
Yeah, since when?
Well, I had a note from Abby yesterday. She wants me to bring the Black Swan out to the island.
The Black Swan? I thought the old man...
changed his mind, I guess. No, you never can tell with him.
But, Abby, I mean, after what happened...
Oh, come now. You certainly haven't started believing that old wives stuff.
No, of course not. But the old man swore he'd never look at the ship again.
Search me. Well, anyway, I'm to bring her out Saturday. You want to come?
Yeah. Think I do.
Here, Amos. You take over the wheel. She handles like a dream.
Well, Fred knew how to build them.
Now watch it. She's trigger light to the touch. Well, maybe this is the turning point. Maybe now Abby will set the date. Now that she's put these childish fears behind her.
You've been patient, Philip.
I'd wait forever for Abby Thorne.
How about the old man? You know how he feels about Abby or how he was supposed to.
You'll just have to learn to like it. Cut her closer to the boy. That's it, Amos.
Right.
Now, a few points. Ah, there we are. There's the dock.
Abby was standing there on the little dock, waiting for us, waving to us as we anchored in the cove and jumped into the dory. A dark-haired, willowy girl. Lovely girl. And next to her was Sarah, Sister Sarah, 14. A smaller, incredibly faithful replica of Abby. Except for her eyes. Her piercing, stony blue eyes, which were like Caleb's. Frighteningly like Caleb's. Abby had planned a picnic for us at Arrow Beach on the other side of the island. She and Philip had set out first to get away from Caleb, I suspect. And I was to bring Sarah along later. Well, just as we were about to leave the house, Caleb stopped me. He'd scarcely uttered a word since our arrival.
I want you to see something, Amos.
Oh, all right.
You come too, Sarah, to Fred's room.
All right, Father, only I know what it is.
Yes, Sarah knows. It's our secret. We keep it locked in Fred's room. We waited till Abby was gone. Abby's left us.
Left?
Oh, Father means she's with Philip.
Yeah, Abby's gone. Abby's left us. See, Amos, on the floor there.
Why, it's a tool chest, complete set.
His tools, Fred's. All his tools, his planes and chisels and gouges.
And all the bits and braces and mallets.
All his tools.
Aren't they beautiful, Amos, the way they shine? We keep them shining and clean, just the way Fred always kept them.
It's our secret. Abby doesn't know. Abby's left us, but Fred is back now. See all his tools.
And someday, Father's going to take them and put them all in that big chest and bury them out at sea.
That's what Sarah and me planned. Only now I have a better idea.
You didn't tell me, Father. You didn't. Where, Father? Where could there be a better place?
There's a better place, all right. Well, go on, go on. Get to your picnic. There's a better place, all right.
I don't remember much about that picnic, except Abby's unusual quietness, Philip's efforts to keep the conversation alive, and Sarah's strange restlessness. She stared at me constantly, warning me silently with those intense blue eyes, warning me about that secret of Caleb's. Well, I was glad, I know that, when we finally said goodbye late that night, rowed out to the Black Swan, and cast off.
Amos, I don't get it.
Get what?
The ship, the way she's acting. She's not responding. She's sluggish.
Temperamental. Wait till we get out beyond the cove. She feels the wind. Looks stiff out there.
Hey, that's the jib. Came loose from the cleat. I'll go for it. You take the wheel, Amos. I don't like the way she's handling. She's nosing down in this heavy stuff.
Okay.
Hey, the wind shifted. Bring her about.
I know. I'm trying. She won't take it.
Pull her over. All the way. Quick.
I got her over as far as she'll go. You better get the mainsail down. Push. Hey, watch it, the man.
Yes, he was gone. Swept overboard by the backlash of a splintered mast. Lost in the darkness. Philip Hazlitt, second victim for the Black Swan. Somehow, I managed to get the Swan back. And shortly afterward, I left Pennequit to work in Boston for my uncle's engineering firm. I heard nothing from or about the Thorns for a year when I received a short formal note from Abby. Her father had passed away peacefully in his sleep. Well, I would have been less surprised had Caleb's death been more violent, had the Black Swan somehow been involved. And then once more, Pennequit and the Thorns receded into the past. 3, 4, 5 years slipped by uneventfully before the Black Swan again revived my half-forgotten fears. I had just returned from a conference to find Miss Brewster, my assistant, standing at my desk, glancing at the evening newspaper. She looked up as I entered the office.
You're from Pennequit, Maine, aren't you, Mr. Bradley?
Yeah, what about Pennequit?
Well, this little item here. Possibly you know the girl. Sounds positively spooky. Listen. Girl in mystery drowning, Pennequit, Maine. While her sister stood helplessly on the town dock, Abigail Thorne, 26, was drowned in the bay here at midnight last night.
What?
According to her sister, Sarah, 20, the older girl was just about to board her ship.
The Black Swan.
What? Why, yes. That is the name. The Black Swan. How did you know?
How did I know? It had to be. It had to be.
The dark of night, and a ship with a past that is just as dark. What would you expect of a ship that was launched in blood, but...
Murder! At midnight!
And now back to Murder at Midnight and the Black Swan. Who has the ship of death singled out for its next victim? Listen as Amos tries to find the answer.
So you didn't think a ship could be a murderer? First, Fred Thorne, who built the Black Swan for his sister Abby. Then Philip Hazlitt, who loved that sister Abby. And then Abby. Lovely, dark-haired Abby herself. And who's to be next? Well, that's why I'm here now. Why I've come back after all these years to Pennequit Bay. I'm going to find out tonight. Yeah, I know. It's late and dark. Care to come? No? Can't say I blame you. What's that? May storm a bit later. Well, fine. It suits me just fine. I'm going out there, see? Sailor myself. And before this night is done, I am going to know the answer. In pretty good shape after all this time. Somebody must be taking care of her.
Somebody is, Amos. Very good care of her.
Abby!
That surprises you, Abby coming back here.
It can't be.
Do you need a flashlight to reassure you? Wouldn't Abby's ghost be more companionable in this pale, thin moonlight?
It's you, Sarah. Little Sarah. For a moment,
I thought I was Abigail. Yes, Amos, you were the one who always said I was the image of it. I am. A pale image. A reflection without substance. Come over here and sit down, Amos. After all, we have a lot to talk about. You want to know, don't you? You came back to find out about Abby.
The Black Swan?
Yes, Amos. But the paper didn't say how or why, did it? It didn't tell about the fights we had, Abby and I, after Father died. The bitter fights we had about the Black Swan. Until one day, a few months ago it was. Well, why not, Abby? Why not sell her? What's so precious about that horrible ship?
I won't, that's all. I won't.
Hasn't she caused enough grief?
Let her rot to pieces in the harbor. I won't sell.
You're afraid, aren't you? Afraid she might kill someone else.
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid.
Then make sure she never has another chance.
Sure? How?
Destroy her. In the harbor.
Destroy her? Yes, Sarah. Yes, why not?
We have some gasoline at the house. We could burn her in the harbor. Tonight.
And that's what you were going to do that night.
Yes, Amy. We put two cans of gasoline in the dory and rowed out to the Black Swan.
But it said in the paper you were standing on the dock.
I was. We were about halfway out when suddenly a strange feeling of terror swept over me. Put back, Abby! Put back!
Not now, Sarah. No, this is the way it must be.
No, I tell you, no, I don't trust that ship.
You won't ever have to again.
I can't, Abby. I can't. Take me back. Help me, Blazer. I'll jump overboard and swim back.
All right, I'll put you ashore. And then I'll come back. And I'll do it alone.
I see.
See what? Do you see me standing there watching the dory and that choppy swell? Do you see me standing there watching Abby get to her feet, a gasoline can in one hand? Do you see it happening swiftly, without warning, the Black Swan rolling violently, swamping the dory? Do you see Abby pitching forward, her head striking the black hole? Do you see her plunge backwards, her knees catching the gunwale, her body snapping like a broken oar? Her head beneath the water. When I got there, she was dead.
The Black Swan again.
Yes, the Black Swan. And we're the only two left who care.
And we'd come back to find out.
Amos, who loved my sister in silence. And Sarah.
And Sarah, who?
I might have told you once. But you went away like the others.
I've come back, Sarah.
Yes. Because there's no rest for you either. No rest until we know. Look to the anchor, Amos. It's time we did know.
My friend at the dock was right. It's going to storm.
Yes, I think so. And we haven't learned anything. She's handling like any other ship.
Only better. It's Fred Builder to handle.
She's biding her time, that's all.
What are you thinking?
Do you remember the picnic that day?
Yes, sir.
That night, after you and Philip had left, I went to Fred's room. They were gone. His tools, the chest.
Gone? You mean Caleb?
Yes. Father had taken them away while we were picnicking over at Arrow Beach.
Taken them where?
He wouldn't tell me. He said he'd found a better place. He kept saying that over and over, but he would never tell me where. Poor Father.
Yes, sir.
He changed so after Philip was killed.
How?
Well, it goes back to Fred, my brother Fred. Don't you see? Father commissioned Fred to build the Black Swan as a birthday present for Abby. It was one of the ways he thought he could, well, buy Abby away from Philip.
And Fred was the first victim of the Black Swan.
Yes. Then, Philip. And the more Father tried, the worse it became. Abby wouldn't talk to him, not a word.
In death, Philip took Abby further away from your father than he could possibly have done in life.
Philip's death? No, Amos. Philip's murderer did that. The Black Swan.
Better put about and head back, Sarah. I don't like the way she's blowing up.
And I don't care, Amos. I feel so different now about everything.
Now that the swan is behaving herself?
Yes.
Well, maybe so, but the weather isn't. Now that you promised to come back to Boston with me and to leave all this behind you, I'm not taking any chance.
Anywhere you say, Amos, anywhere. Because now I'm free. See how she's riding the storm? It's as if she were free, too.
Any sign of that breakwater yet?
I should catch it in the next lightning. It's somewhere off port. I know it is. It can't be far now.
Keep your eye peeled.
I am. There, Amos. It is.
What did you say?
Off port now. Hold her till I tell you, then cut in. I think we can make it on one run.
Okay. Say when.
All set.
All set.
No! Swing her in now, Amos.
I am. I'm trying. Give me everything I...
No, Amos! Quicker, we'll hit the rocks on the other side of the entrance.
She won't fall.
Put her about then, quick!
She won't. She's not answering the helm. She's gone dead the way she did the night Philip. It's all right,
Heavy,
Sarah.
I mean...
You're safe. It's all over.
Oh, Amos. Amos, the ship.
Finished, dear. All finished. Can you sit up? Here, take my hand. Look, Sarah. I want to show you something. Over there. Can you see?
See? See what? You mean the shining...
Yes, sir. It's half submerged.
Why, there? No. No, they can't be.
They are. They're his tools. Fred's tool chest and everything.
Father. Father did it.
Yeah. When Caleb said he knew a better place, he meant in the ship.
Oh, Father. Father.
Yes, he took the chest and nailed it up under the deck. Up at the bow. That's why the black swan acted so strangely the night Philip and I left the island.
But, Amos, tonight she was acting so beautifully and too...
I know. That's because somehow all these years she's been rocking there in the harbor. The chest worked itself loose, just loose enough so it would shift with the ship's motion.
But then, I mean, what happened when we tried to bring her in tonight?
Well, my guess is that the chest suddenly got itself wedged in tight in one place, off center. That's why she wouldn't answer the helm.
Fred's chest... Yes, Amos. Yes, that's why she rolled so badly the night Abby and I...
Don't, Sarah. It's all over now.
Yes, it is over now, isn't it? It was almost over for us. And then no one would have known.
We know now, Sarah. Yes, the black swan has been brought to justice. And by her own hand.
A wild, strange family, and the ship that was launched in blood. With such a setting, it's no wonder that what was meant as a tribute and an act of love turned into murder at midnight. Remember to be with us again when death comes in with the rising tide and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. Our storyteller, Amos Bradley, was played by Lawson Zerbe.
Murder at Midnight on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from December 13th, 1946. You are listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of one of radio's earliest horror shows and one of the series' earliest broadcasts. It's The Witch's Tale, with the story The Entomologist, which was heard on July 11, 1932, and broadcast again on January 7, 1935.
We bring you The Witch's Tale, written and produced by Alonzo Dean Cole. Now let us join old Nancy and Satan, her wise black cat.
Hannah, I'm 23 years old, I be today. Yes, sir. Hannah, I'm 23 years old. Satan. Yeah. Tell folks to douse out them lights so we'll have it nice and dark. Yeah. That's it. Draw up the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep, and soon you'll be upon a ship that's bound for Africa. Africa, where strange things happen. Aboard that ship begins our yarn about a man who studied insects, our yarn of the entomologist. The entomologist.
Roy, I've never known you to acquire such a sudden dislike for anyone before. Yet only a few days ago, when you learned Dr. Sternoff was on this boat, you could hardly wait until you were presented to him.
I know. He's probably the greatest entomologist in the world. It's an honor for a mere journeyman bug hunter like myself to have him even say good morning when he passes. But, Edith, the man gives me the shivers. That body of his that seems all arms and legs and the black whiskers, he reminds me of some tremendous spider.
Maybe that's what happens to men who study insects. They grow to look like them. My goodness, Roy. When you reach his age, you may resemble a... What is the bug you specialize on?
My future's safe. I go in for butterflies.
Then how attractive you'll be at 50. If a little flighty. Oh, but seriously, I think your prejudice concerning Dr. Sternoff is absurd. I rather like him.
You show it.
Why shouldn't I? His offer to escort me to Rogers Plantation from Cape Town places me rather deeply in his debt.
You cabled your brother not to meet you, that you're going to make the trip with Dr. Sternoff?
Yes. It'll save Roger a difficult journey from what he's written me of the traveling facilities in his part of Africa. And as Dr. Sternoff's own headquarters is so close to the plantation, it becomes a natural neighborly arrangement.
Edith, will you let me take you to your brother's place when we reach Cape Town?
Why, Roy, you're going to Nepal, you said. Roger is in Damaraland.
Well, I can study insect life there as well as in Natal, and I'd like to meet your brother, and, well, you know the real reason.
Oh.
The same reason that I've followed you aboard this boat, that I've followed you everywhere during the last 2 years. I'm mad about you, Edith. Turned me down so many times, I'm not going to ask you to marry me again now, but I'm not going to let you go traipsing around Africa with anyone like Sternoff.
Roy, are you jealous of a man twice your age?
No, I'm not, but I don't like the way he looks at you. I'm not going to have you alone with him. I'm going to take you to Damaraland myself.
Oh, Roy. Eventually, I suppose I'll have to marry you. It's apparent I can't lose you.
You only would marry me, but I'm not going to ask you again. It seems so useless.
You never tried asking me under such romantic conditions as this. Starry night, the deck of a ship, wild waves singing. Really, Roy, the surroundings are ideal.
Stop making fun of me.
Well, if you won't propose, I can't make you.
I'm tired of hearing you say no.
I'm tired of saying no.
Huh? Edith, will you marry me?
Yes.
What? What?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my.
Edith, you really mean it.
I do.
Edith.
But I'll change my mind unless you quit staring and kiss me within the next half second.
Oh, Edith. Oh. Darling. Oh, sweetheart.
Good evening.
Doctor,
it seems that I intrude at an unwelcome moment. Excuse me.
Oh, wait, Doctor. For the sake of retaining your good opinion, let me explain that I don't make it a habit to let men kiss me, unless my hair...
Dr. Sternoff, Miss Gardner has just honored me by promising
to... Don't be stilted, Roy. I've just decided, Doctor, that Mr. Bolton will make me a fairly good husband. So we've just become engaged.
Mr. Bolton is to be congratulated. I envy him greatly.
Thank you.
Now, since you'll have Dr. Sternoff to talk to, I'm going to leave you, Roy, and go to bed.
Oh, Edith.
I'm tired. With the prospect of matrimony staring her in the face, a girl needs solitude and rest.
Well, I'll take you to your stateroom.
No, I want to be rid of you now. See you in the morning. Good night.
Good night, Miss Gardner.
Good night, Edith.
A very fine girl, your fiancée.
Very. I think I'll go to my cabin, too. Good night, Doctor.
Do not hurry away, Mr. Bolton. Suppose we talk a while. When do you and Miss Gardner plan to be married?
We haven't discussed that yet.
You will take time, I hope. Affairs of such importance should not be rushed into. Perhaps you will wait until after you conclude your studies in Natal.
I've decided not to go to Natal. I'm taking Miss Gardner to her brother's.
That is a pleasure I had looked forward to.
Since we shall all be going to the same part of the country, I suppose there's no reason why we shouldn't all take the trip together.
No, except that I had counted on Miss Gardner's company alone.
Sorry to have disarranged your plans.
It is unfortunate that you have. I do not like my plans disarranged.
I don't like your tone, Doctor. Just what do you mean?
Suppose I hear your views on my probable meaning.
All right, I'll give them to you. You think I haven't noticed the way you followed Miss Gardner around ever since we came aboard this ship? You're crazy. And I don't like the way you keep looking at her. As though she were some specimen you were tracking down. I don't like anything about you, Doctor, since you've asked for it. And I want you to keep away from my future wife.
You are so candid, I shall be equally so. I enjoy the society of your future wife. And as the future is such an unknown quantity, I do not intend to keep away. Also, as an entomologist yourself, you must have heard that I seldom track down a specimen in vain.
Why, you think...
I think your engagement to Miss Gardner is a mistake. One that may be rectified before marriage. Before you leave the ship. Good night, Mr. Bolton.
I wish I could have heard such a ridiculous quarrel. You must have sounded like small boys with chips on your shoulders.
Well, that's the reason I never told you about it until tonight. It was so utterly ridiculous that it confirmed my suspicion that Sternoff is nearly as mad about you as I am.
Well, you don't know how flattered I feel. Two mad lovers on one small ship.
I don't believe you feel flattered at all. There's something too inhuman about that man for you to really want his attentions. All you enjoy is my jealousy.
He's very strange. A little insane, I think. You know, he's literally obsessed with a desire for power. Rather peculiar in a naturalist who has devoted his life to the study of tiny insects. Mm.
Those tiny insects, if uncontrolled by man and not destroyed by their own warring proclivities, could annihilate all other living creatures. They are power, undirected.
He made a remark something like that. Said that someday a genius would develop a new species that would enable him to rule the world.
By genius, he meant himself, of course.
Oh, Roy. You're so ridiculously bitter toward the poor man. You say he threatened you that night?
No, he didn't threaten exactly. Simply said our engagement was a mistake that might be rectified before I left this ship.
Rectified by what?
By his personal magnetism, maybe. By proving to you that his charm so outshone mine that you'd give me back the ring I haven't bought you yet and take his instead.
Well, if that was his purpose, he's evidently forgotten it. I've scarcely seen him since that night. And tomorrow we land at Cape Town. Which reminds me, there's packing still to be
done. Oh, don't go in yet.
Oh, I must. There's so many things to get together. And I'm sleepy anyway.
I'll take you to your door, then. Let's get married in Cape Town tomorrow, dear.
Oh, now, don't start rushing me again. Roger's the only relative I possess, and I'm not going to marry you without his brotherly blessing. Here we are. Good night, dear.
Sweetheart.
Roy, I'll let me go before someone comes around the corner.
Good night, dear.
You look so romantically sad at our parting. Here's one more kiss. That's all. Good night.
Good night.
Good evening, Mr. Bolton.
Huh? Oh.
I seem to come upon you always at the conclusion of a romantic moment.
You seem always to be watching for such moments, Dr. Sternoff.
On the contrary, they're very painful to me. I would prefer not to witness them. But let us not quarrel again. Our ship lands tomorrow. Let us simply say goodbye.
There'll be time for that when we dock in the morning.
One never knows in the rush of departure. We may not meet.
When Miss Gardner and I reach her brother's place, we'll be neighbors. Farewell seemed rather superfluous, Doctor.
I live but 10 miles from Miss Gardner's brother. Still, goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Bolton. Goodbye.
Hello, Mr. Bolton. Here to be a slight room.
Hello, Stuart. Yes, going to bed.
I just saw you talking to the gentleman with the whiskers. Something important he wanted to see you for, I fancy. Been hanging around this corridor all evening.
Waiting for me?
Well, he didn't sigh, but as he belongs over in Section A, I imagine he was waiting for someone, and he went away after talking to you.
He wasn't hanging around Miss Gardner's door, was he?
Oh, no, see, he wasn't hanging around any place special. Just up and down the hall, yeah. Wasn't he waiting for you, sir?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
No, sir. Well, here we are, George.
Good night, Stuart. Oh, wait. We'll be parting tomorrow. I may as well have your tip off of mine now. Here. Thank you for your very excellent service.
Oh, thank you, sir. Here, don't bother looking for your key. I'll unlock your door, sir.
Thanks.
Here, now, just a minute. Here. And now I'll turn on the light. Well, it's a good thing I came in. The light switch don't work.
It's all right when I left this evening.
Yeah, probably a fuse burned out. You just wait outside, sir. I'll let it take direct. Oh, the door's
I'll open it, Stuart.
Yeah, please, sir. I've across the cabin from it. It's like a stitch in here.
The spring latch is snapped. Where till I find my key? Here. Stuart, my key doesn't work.
It don't?
Oh, that's funny.
Don't bother, sir. I hope it's inside here. Well, that is funny. I can't turn the latch.
Well, what's happened to this lock? Worked all right when you opened it a moment ago.
I'll soon find out, sir. Like this match. There. Oh!
Stuart! Stuart, what's wrong? Stuart! Help! Help me, someone!
What's the matter?
Stuart's locked inside my cabin. He just screamed. Here, help me break down this door.
Here, I'm with you.
Here, together with our shoulders. Now!
That did it.
Stuart! Stuart, where are you?
Just here. Oh, who has a flashlight?
Here's one.
There he is, on the floor.
Look at his staring eyes.
Throat has been torn open. Oh. He's dead.
Dead?
Who? What killed him? There's nothing. There's no one in this room.
What do you think killed the steward, Satan? That's right. But then Miss didn't understand what Satan said. We'll have to come see us next time I have a birthday. And then we'll spin you the rest of our yarn about the entomologist. The entomologist. Now draw up to the fire and gaze into embers. Gaze into them deep, and soon you'll be in an African jungle. For that's why we fix up our story now. And soon you'll hear more about the entomologist. The entomologist.
There's no question in my mind, Roger, that whatever killed the steward in my cabin was intended to kill me. The door that made him prisoner didn't slam by chance. A spring had been attached to it. The lock had been tampered with. If he hadn't gone in there ahead of me by the sheerest accident...
But what killed the steward?
No one knows. Except Dr. Sternhoff, I think. But he was with the captain at the time it happened, so had a perfect alibi.
You say there was no way for anyone to get out of the cabin except through the single door?
No, and nothing came out that way. One of the portholes was open, but no man or animal could have escaped through it. Unless they could scale smooth horizontal walls like a fly that have had to drop into the sea.
The steward's throat was torn.
No, it wasn't torn exactly. It was as though something had bitten him there. Something poisonous, for it killed instantly. And the wound was frightfully inflamed. Yet if the bite was made by an animal, it was one of an entirely unknown species.
I've seen two such wounds as you described.
You have?
Yes. I didn't want to talk any more about this before Edith. That's why I suggested we walk out here in the bush tonight. She's upset enough about the whole thing as it is.
She refuses to believe that Dr. Sternhoff had anything to do with it. Why, she'd have made this trip up here with his party if I hadn't absolutely insisted we come by ourselves.
I don't share my sister's trust of Sternhoff.
You say you've seen two similar wounds to that which killed the steward.
Yes, on black boys in the vicinity of Sternhoff's place. Only whatever bit them was not frightened away as easily and as soon as your steward's case. But when found, every drop of blood had been drained from their dead bodies.
What on earth?
The natives ascribed the death to vampires.
That's ridiculous.
Nothing is ridiculous in Africa. The blacks say Sternhoff set the vampires on the men. They call him the devil doctor around here.
I'll be glad when Edith and I are married tomorrow and on our way to Natal. I don't want her even in the same province with that man.
I'll hate to see you go so soon after your arrival here, but, well, I'll feel a little easier myself. Well, here we are back at the house. The
lights are all out. Edith must have gone to bed.
We've been talking back there in the bush a long time. It's late, but someone's still up around the place. There's my houseboy.
Effendi! Effendi!
He must have something on his mind Effendi. To make him run like that.
Effendi! Effendi Garner, you are well of your sickness?
Sickness?
Yes. Yeah, you start back before your lady sister find you.
What are you talking about? Where is my sister?
Miss Gardner isn't here.
No, man, come, say Effendi Garner sick, hurt in bush. She go look see.
How long ago?
Half hour, maybe.
Roger, where do you suppose...
Who was the man who came here for my sister?
Black boy come from Devil Doctor house.
From Sternhoff!
Come to the house and get our guns and we'll find out what this is all about.
If he's laid his filthy hands on Edith, I'll...
Take your shirt on. He wouldn't dare do anything to her.
What?
But the door's locked. My sister locked it, Nebu?
I know, see.
Never mind. Burst it open. Come, let me get a gun and start for...
Now, there it goes.
Strike a light, Nebu.
Never mind. I can find the guns in the dark.
Oh!
What's the matter?
Something brushed across my face. Felt like a sticky silken cord.
There's something in this room, Effendi. Something moving.
Yes, I hear it.
Get those guns. It's an animal of some kind.
I have my rifle. A light, Nebu, a light.
Me do.
God, look! Shoot! Shoot! Hurry! It's running away!
God, I got it this time.
Good God, look at it. That's what got the steward. And your blacks here. It was put in this house tonight to kill us.
But no such monster can exist. It's impossible.
It did exist. There's its dead body. It's a giant spider, 2 feet long.
Easy now. Sternhoff's house lies right back of that high fence.
You don't think any of those spiders are loose out here?
I hope not. God, where did such a monster come from?
I think Sternhoff made it.
Made it?
Yes. The man is a scientific genius. I believe he's found a way to increase the size of a small, ordinary spider. I remember a paper he published some years ago hinting at the possibility of such a thing. That cord which brushed across my face was a strand of its web.
If you hadn't felt that...
We'd have stumbled right into it. Then...
Don't speak of it.
Now I know why the blacks found dead here had been drained of blood. The esophagus of a spider is too small to assimilate solid food. So he sucks the juices of his prey.
I'd rather believe the native's vampire theory.
It's more pleasant than that. And that thing, Sternhoff, the monster who turned loose such things, has Edith in that house.
We'll find her safe. He only wants to be rid of us.
Yes, he's in love with her.
The gate's unlocked. Quiet now. He thinks we're dead. We'll get him unawares.
He should get the drop on us before...
He won't. But if he does, Nebu has reached Sumed by this time, and he's on his way here now with the constabulary.
Sure you can trust Nebu?
Absolutely, where harm is promised Dr. Sternhoff. One of the blacks that spider killed was Nebu's brother.
Come on, hurry.
I want to get my hands on Stern.
He won't escape. He hasn't got a chance.
What? Let go!
I have their guns. Find their arms.
Let me go!
It is useless to struggle, gentlemen. My black boys were selected for their strength.
They are bound to hand me.
You see, gentlemen, it is you who have no chance.
You're not going to get away with this.
I must contradict you. You have been very lucky twice, Mr. Bolton, but no luck holds good forever.
Look here, Sternoff. You'd better turn my sister over to us and let us go while you have the opportunity to save your life. In half an hour, the Sumac constabulary will be here, and they'll tear you to pieces if you harmed us.
I anticipate no trouble from Sumac. You see, I have here another prisoner besides yourself and Edith.
Nebu!
Nebu!
They hit Nebu on his head, Effendi.
Lord!
My boys brought the faithful servant down almost directly he left your house. Now, Mr. Bolton, I intend to prove that your engagement to Miss Gardner was a mistake. A mistake that shall be rectified tonight forever. Take these white men to my laboratory.
Yes,
sir. As a student of insect life, Mr. Bolton, you will appreciate the specimens I am about to show you, whom you will meet intimately.
Oh, my God.
Spiders, gentlemen. Giant spiders. Monster insects that will make me master of the world. Look at them in their cages behind these bars. Spiders. I made them giants. I. Look at them. Hairy, eight-legged monsters whose poison falsies will kill an elephant. Harmless in their cages now, but soon they'll be swarming about you in this room.
You can't.
You won't.
But I can. I shall. This lever here opens every cage at once. I shall press it just as I myself go out this door to safety. Alvo! Marty! Cut the ropes which bind the white man's hand.
Yes, sir, Benzie.
I wish your bodies free. Through the glass panel of this door, it will be a better show to see you try to fight my baby.
What a rotten beast you are.
And he has Edith in this filthy house.
Edith is upstairs, quite safe and ignorant of your presence here. She will be ignorant of how you die. She is very fortunate to be chosen for my mate. As I shall be the master, she will be mistress of the world which I will rule by giant insects who are power.
You're mad. Even a madman can't go through with this.
Oh, it's useless, Roy. We haven't got a chance. Sternoff, if you have a single strain of decency in your carcass before you turn those things upon us, give us a drink.
A drink?
Yes, whiskey. God, we've got to have something to nerve us before you open those cages.
Oh, don't ask that swine for anything, Roger. Let him pull his lever and get it over.
No, no. I can't bear to think of those spiders coming at us. I'll go crazy, Sterner. So I won't know what's happening. I'll cheat you out of your show. Whiskey, Sterner, whiskey. The least you can do is grant me that.
The brother of my future mate has a streak of yellow. Bring them whiskey.
Yes, Ethan.
Not from me. I want nothing from you.
Whiskey for me. Whiskey, for God's sake.
Give it to him.
Here, Effendi.
Thanks. Thanks.
Get out, you black, so you won't see a white man whine.
We go, Effendi.
His boy, Nebu. Lucky has him secure outside.
Nebu cannot get away, Effendi.
Get out, both of you.
White man now unbound. Maybe danger you, Effendi.
I have a pistol in my hand, haven't I? If I haven't the nerve to try anything, get out and close that door.
Yes, Effendi.
I'm impatient for my show to start. Drink your whiskey, you yellow dog.
Yes, a drink. Whiskey.
For you, Sterner.
Roger! I didn't want it to drink, but throw it in your eye.
I'm blind! I can't see it!
Grab his pistol, Roy.
I've already got it. Roger, he stumbled against that lever. The cages are opening.
Quick, out that door.
No, you will not!
He's locked it. Open that door, Sterner, you fool. Those spiders will kill you as well as us.
Oh, no, I'm their master, their creator.
Get that key from him, Roy.
No!
He's thrown it among those spiders.
They're coming from their cages, coming from all sides.
Come, my babies, with your poison hands.
Roy, smash that glass panel in the door.
Yes.
Quick, they're almost on us.
I have it. There's Nebu outside. Nebu, he's free. Nebu, open this door.
No. You cannot get away.
Oh, Edith! Nebu found me and set me free!
Nebu, you were a prisoner too! How did you?
Devil, doctor's man, no such Nebu well. I have hit a knife. They're dead.
Come on, come away, quick!
No,
out of the
place!
No! Oh, those spiders!
Quick, my babies, don't let them get away!
Run, outside this house. The spiders are everywhere.
Get them, my babies, get them! No!
Not me!
Spider, have some turnip!
Keep away! I made you! I am your master! Keep away!
Keep quick!
They have him!
They're tearing him to pieces!
Don't look back, Edith! Run, run!
Oh, Roger, what are you stopping for?
You upset this lamp! There!
You set the place on fire!
It's the only weapon that will stop those things!
It's catching everywhere!
But we're safe outside! At last!
Good fire! Eat evil spirit! Eat devil, devil, doctor!
And those spiders! Oh, please, God, kill every one!
Satan and me's just bitten that if you ever goes to Africa after hearing this filthy yarn, he'll take along a can of insect powder.
The Witch's Tale, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from July 11th, 1932. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.